What is up, everybody? I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. In case you're just joining us, a bit of breaking news as we were coming on the air. Luigi Mangione has been indicted for the murder of the United Healthcare CEO. His next court appearance in Pennsylvania will be Thursday morning at 9 a.m. Again, a bit of breaking news as we came on the air. Luigi Mangione indicted for the murder of Brian Anderson. He will be appearing in court this coming Thursday at 9 a.m. Alvin Bragg is about to give a press conference. That's Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg on this matter. We're going to keep an eyeball on that while we continue forward with our show because we've got a great guest for you. His name is Will Ragland. He's the Vice President of Research, Advocacy, and Outreach at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Will's going to help us put in context what the heck we can expect in 2025, why it matters to you, and how do we prepare? What is going on? Well, welcome back, Will. I appreciate you taking the time to join us today. First of all, happy holidays to you and yours, Will.
Got you.
Thanks much. What do you think are the most important things for us to be prepared for in 2025?
So I kind of carve this up into two pieces. One is what we expect to be coming from the administration, Trump, the Republican Congress, and then what we expect to see from Democrats who are trying to lick their wounds, figure out what happened, and move forward. So start with the Republican side of the ledger. Right out of the gate, they're going to move to consolidate power within the office of the presidency, remove any hurdles, remove any obstacles of any person, law, policy, thing, institution standing in their way to do the things that they want. They're going to do that in three parts. Russ Vogt has been nominated to run the Office of Management and Budget. He was the main architect of Project 2025. He ran the OMB during the last Trump administration and has sketched out a very detailed, comprehensive game plan pretty much remove all independent agencies in the federal government. What are those? Those are things like the Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC, the FCC, and they've even talked about going as far as the Fed. We're talking about agencies like the CFPB. Those are a lot of acronyms, but there are a lot of independent agencies that act independently of the president.
If I can't jump in here, well, one of the things that's so important for people to know about this, because we can all say we want change, we want government to be more responsive, right? We want to see things get better. The agencies that are independent, there's a through line amongst them, right? If you think about the SEC, the FCC, so Securities and Exchange Commission, the Federal Communication Commission, the Federal Reserve itself, and the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, many of these so-called independent federal agencies are there to ensure fair playing fields for small businesses and that consumers and people that listen to the airwaves, et cetera, are in fact protected, that people with a lot of power and access aren't breaking the rules to the detriment of regular people. There's a through line there, the Fed working for the benefit of the entire economy. And I think that's important for people to keep in mind as we move forward. I apologize for the interruption.
No, that's a great point. So these independent agencies are supposed to enforce the laws. There are umpires, there are referees that aren't supposed to have any political side of anything. They're trying to enforce the law. The FBI is another one. Again, these are agencies that in a lot of instances have longer terms than a presidential term. So yes. 6 to 10 years. So these people are supposed to stay in power. Well, Trump has made it precedent to just get rid of them when he comes into power. He did it with James Comey at the FBI last go around, and he's going to do it across the board as many times and in many instances as he can. Russ Vogt has made that plain. In an interview with Tucker Carlson recently, he laid that out. The second piece of this is eliminating a lot of the civil servants that support a lot of these agencies across the board. through basically a loyalist test and something they've called Schedule F that will make it a lot easier to get rid of career federal employees. Think of people like scientists, safe food inspectors, FAA, parts inspectors, attorneys, people in the general counsel's offices. It's like, well, you can't actually do that because it's against the law.
Well, get rid of that guy. That guy or gal. Wait, we can't do that? No, you're gone. Thank you.
Yep, pretty much.
And the third thing is?
The third thing is impoundment, which is basically a fancy term for allowing the president to not spend money that Congress has directed them to spend. So if Congress says, hey, we're giving you this money to spend on a specific program, they can say, well, we don't have to spend all of it. In fact, we may not spend any of it. So those are the three primary ways that they're going to try to consolidate power to implement the policies that you're starting to see with the DOGE Commission, making these massive cuts. Whatever the heck that is, they're going to use it to start their mass deportation and immigration moves, and their tariff plan, which doesn't require much, if any, congressional action. And I think you'll start to see a very transactional approach to governing. So industries or countries that really are that don't want these tariffs are like, well, what can we do for you? What can we do for you politically? What can we do for you personally? You can think of the types of transactions that they might be willing to take to try and curry favor within a Trump administration to gain some advantage around not having as much or even no tariffs implemented on a specific country or industry or sector. So those are some of the big things I'd look out for. Obviously, their big push is going to be a big tax cut bill that they're aiming to make even further cuts for large corporations. He recently said he wants to bump it down to 15%. Me and a colleague did an analysis on this earlier this year, showing that the top 100 corporations in the U.S. would get a $50 billion tax cut annually. And just for perspective, that is about as much as the United States spends, or the federal government spends, on K-12 education every year.
Wow.
And that's just for the largest 100 corporations. So, there's some big things they're trying to move. I think they're going to try and attack pieces of the ACA and yes, healthcare. They're going to try and, as part of this, repeal the Inflation Reduction Act, which had a lot of great things in terms of reducing drug costs, allowing Medicare to negotiate with pharmaceutical companies to bring down the cost of drugs, insulin caps. So I think you're going to start to see some of that.
Please continue.
That's the bad stuff.
Yes.
And if we want to continue on the bad stuff, we can. But on our side, I believe it or not, I'm sort of excited for a fresh start and a new page.
Me too, Will. Tell me why you're excited. I think there's progress to be made here. I think there's opportunity.
Well, for 99% of my career, and that's stretching back 20 years in politics, I've been executing against someone else's script. And I think right now, especially this year, there's a lot of room for experiments, innovation, trying new things, and trying to reach people in places where we may not have always gone. There's a real big opportunity for us to sort of shed this legacy past and this reflex to defend the status quo and our institutions, which aren't working for way too many people.
This is fascinating that you say this, because I heard the newly minted senator from New Jersey, Andy Kim, was interviewed on NPR, and he was kind of giving his own postmortem, and here's where his understanding is. And he said something very similar, Will, to what you just said. And that is, and he does lots of town halls. That's one of his things. He said what he's heard from voters after the election, because he's done a few, was that to them, the Democratic Party stood for preservation and defense of the status quo. And he said that voters translated this defend democracy as defend the status quo. And that didn't, like, whatever that meant, it was too vague, too unspecific. He also said that voters didn't particularly respond well to being, you know, our candidate, Vice President Harris, being out there with Liz Cheney, both of whom then took on, they kind of had this interactive impression that left it looking very status quo, right? The establishment kind of candidates. Seems to be that you're saying the same thing. And this is a lot of the place where I feel hopeful as well, that Democrats, forget the playbook, forget the old talking points, go out there, let's talk about what's really going on. Let's speak plainly to and with people. Let's engage in conversation and let's actually bust the status quo. This is what people want to see. They want to see improvements.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. So one of my things here is, and I think we have to an extent done that with our actions, but we don't get the eyeballs. Like, we are defined by the other side. Like, when people think of Democrats, far too many people hear and see the definition of what progressives or Democrats or liberals or whatever are. We're defined by the Hannitys or the Dan Bonginos of the world or the Tucker Carlson of the world or the Elon Musk or Trumps of the world. We have to get out there and meet voters where they are. And but what I mean by that, that's easy to say, but what I mean by that is, we have to get eyeballs. And the way you get eyeballs and get people interested is to have genuine, authentic conversations back and forth and debate. People want to see where we differ. Like, even if we're out there on some show and we're getting slammed and like most of the audience doesn't agree with them, that's okay. At least they know where we're coming from and they're hearing it straight from the horse's mouth.
Right? Yes.
Like, Trump gets credit for this all the time. When you see interviews with his voters, they're like, yeah, I don't really agree with him on this, but at least I know where he's coming from or what he's saying.
Well, like, be clear, be specific, say, I disagree, or this is what I believe in, to take an affirmative case. Listen, I get negative feedback every day on this show from people that are listening telling me they don't agree, but at least I'm trying to speak to what I think is most important for us to change, for the vast majority of us to do better, right? Like, these are the things that have been broken, and I'll own and I'll take the heat for messages not properly conveyed to voters in the past by Democrats and steps that weren't big enough, right? And I'll always have the debate and happy to debate the past and what Dems have done for the middle class and working people. But the point is, moving forward, we have to make that case in a much more affirmative way. And I do believe that this is an opportunity to do that. When we come back, we got just a couple of minutes, so I'm going to gild the lily a little bit here, Will, because I want to ask you a particular strategy question about Dems in 2025. You mentioned what I think could be one of the most economically destabilizing and hurtful to the middle class tax proposals of a generation. It was bad enough in 2017, right? It will be worse if these tax cuts are extended and deepened in a new Donald Trump tax cut plan for the wealthiest corporations and wealthiest among us. My question to you and to everybody out there listening, regardless of what you think needs else to be fixed in the system, to me, giving billionaires more tax cuts ain't a good solution, right? Taking $50 billion out of our revenues is not a good solution, especially when it equates to our federal government's education budget. Here's my question that I want to come back to you, Will, with, and I also want folks at home to start thinking about. And that is, do Democrats oppose all of it? Do we compromise on something to get some tax cuts for the middle class? What's the political tactic when it comes to Trump tax giveaway to billionaires and our richest corporations 2.0? I'm joined by Will Ragland, Vice President of Research, Advocacy, and Outreach at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. We'll discuss Trump's tax plan when we come back right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.